Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Geek Speak. I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic is Agile Scrum, the new, old management framework. And today we'll be talking a little bit about me, why I'm qualified to speak to this subject. I introduce the term Agile Scrum. I'll talk about Scrum roles, Scrum ceremonies or meetings, and some Scrum artifacts. So please feel free to join the conversation. If you have any questions or if you want to talk about your Scrum experience, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And the real reason you want to click the follow button is because as I get new topics and things come up, it'll automatically send you an update to where we are and things of that nature. So without further ado, let's begin. So as I said earlier, I was going to talk a little bit about who I am and why I'm qualified to actually speak to this subject, and I would do so at this time. I'm actually been doing this thing for about a decade now. I've been actually a professional for the last 20 years. 12 of the years were with the Department of the Army, United States Army, and after that, for the last decade or so, I've been with defense contractors, and I have a certificate in information assurance from the University of Colorado. I also taught cryptography and PKI at one of the defense contractors, as well as for the last 5 years, I've been doing these tech talks, or geek speaks, if you will, for on a various amount of subjects. But mainly, it has been on service-oriented architectures, for the most part. And so I have a vast amount of experience in software engineering, software management, software development, and specifically, I built several major products, web portals. My graduate work was using JEE, actually dealing with multi-level security. I had some experience dealing with Beeple, Access, WS Addressing, SOAR Suite, implemented a full SOAR cluster, and several web server security components I've developed. And as far as agile methodologies are concerned, in 2002, I was actually doing some extreme programming, which is a component of agile, and I've been a certified Scrum Master for about 6 months now. So basically, that's my experience in a nutshell. I would be more than happy to share all of the specifics with you on an individual basis. Just give me a call. The number to dial is 323-580-5712, and I would like to talk. I would be more than happy to talk in more detail about that. Now, to name today's title, is called Agile Scrum, the new old management framework. And that's a title that has been somewhat borrowed from what I would consider to be the grandfathers of Scrum. And that would be Takauchi and Nanaka. So if you have some type of experience with Agile Scrum, I kind of know a little bit about the whole concept of it, you would know that Takauchi and Nanaka actually wrote a paper in 1986 that described a lot of the components at least the theoretical components of Scrum. And since that time, you know, Sutherland and Swaber, which I would consider to be the father of Scrum, are some of the people that took that foundation and build upon it to champion Scrum as we know it today. Now, it has truly evolved over the last several years, and this is the reason I wanted to talk a little bit about it today, because a lot of people think that Scrum is something that happened over the last few years, maybe within a decade or so, and that's simply not the case. So as we move in this direction, I want to talk a little bit about the paper that Takauchi and Nanaka wrote back in 1986, and it reads as follows. It says, "The rules of the game in the new product development are changing. Many companies have discovered that it takes more than the accepted basics of high quality, low cost, and differentiation to excel in today's competitive market. It also takes speed and flexibility. This change is reflected in the emphasis companies are placing on new products as a source of new sales and profits. At 3M, for example, products less than 5 years old account for 25% of sales. A 1981 survey of 700 U.S. companies indicated that new products would account for one-third of all profit in the 1980s and increase from one-fifth in the 1970s. And here's what's really important about this paper. It said, this new emphasis on speed and flexibility calls for a different approach for managing new product development. The traditional sequential or relay race approach to product development, exemplified by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration phase program planning, may conflict with the goals of maximum speed and flexibility. Instead, a holistic or rugby approach, where a team tries to go the distance as a unit, passing the ball back and forth, may better serve today's competitive market. And so what Takauchi and Nanaka are simply saying is that We hear the term, or we've heard the term waterfall with respect to software engineering practices or principles or methodologies. And this waterfall approach is simply a relay race where, you know, once you come through the requirement phase, you hand it off onto the next phase, which is design, and you hand that next phase off to the implementation, and then next phase perhaps hand it off to the integration, verification, and test, and that next phase may hand it off into, you know, another component. And so that relay race, this is sequential, is really not commensurate with the fact that you're trying to get things done in a faster manner, if you will. And so what he can contrast that to was the rugby approach, where you kind of get together and you move as a unit, kind of doing all those little things collectively as you go along. And so that was one of the first times that we heard the whole analogy towards Scrum introduced in his paper, when he referred to this whole new approach, what he called this a holistic or rugby approach, where a team tries to go the distance as a unit, passing the ball back and forth, may better serve today's competitive environment. And so they go on to say, under the old approach, a product development process moved like a relay race, with one group of functional specialists passing the baton to the next group. The project went sequentially from phase to phase: concept development, feasibility testing, product design, development process, pilot production, and final production. Under this method, functions were specialized and segmented. The marketing people examine customers' needs and perceptions in developing product concepts. The R&D engineers selected the approach, the appropriate design. The production engineers put into shape, and other functional specialists carry the baton at different stages of the race. Now, under the rugby approach, the product development process emerges from the constant interaction of a hand-picked multidisciplinary team whose members work together from start to finish. Rather than moving in defined, highly structured stages, the process is born out of the team members' interplay. A group of engineers, for example, may start to design the product, phase three, before all the results of the feasibility test, phase two, are in, or the team may be forced to reconsider a decision as a result of later information. The team does not stop then, but engages in iterative experimentation. This goes on even the latest phases of the development process. Now, he shows a couple of examples here where it illustrates the difference between the traditional linear approach to product development, the rugby approach. But nevertheless, the sequence approach labeled Type A in this diagram is typified by NASA. The overlap approach is represented by Type B, where the overlapping occurs only at the border or adjacent phases. Now, he also talks about this approach is essential for companies seeking to develop new products quickly and flexibly. Again, he says this approach, this rugby approach, is essential for companies seeking to develop new products quickly and flexibly. The shift from linear to an integrated approach encourages trial and error and challenges the status quo. It stimulates new kinds of learning and thinking within the organization at different levels and functions. Just as important, this strategy for product development can act as an agent of change for the larger organization. The energy and motivation the effort produces can spread throughout the big company and begin to break down some of the rigidities that have set in over time. And so he goes on in this article to highlight different companies that are using this approach. Again, this is truly the beginning of what we know to be Agile Scrum. Now, of course, when you hear the term or you hear people's implementation of Scrum, you always hear different flavors, or you may hear different excuses of why. But just as Takauchi and Inaka talked about it being really, really challenging, and however, it is really important for you to get it right because it will increase flexibility and it'll be able to allow you to produce products quickly. So, which brings me to my next point here. So, as you can see, prior to 2001, agile methods were being used around the world, but were not really called that. They had this this different flavor, if you will. They went by their own names. Some of them were calling this component dynamic systems development. They were calling it extreme programming, which I mentioned earlier that I was also using. Feature-driven development was also a component of this agile methodology. And all around the globe, these type of delivery methods were emerging in response to the industry plague of enlightenment, trying to get things to market faster and dealing with a lot of different bugs in the code. They were dealing with a lot of dissatisfied customers. And so the originators of these methods got together and coined the term Agile. So, you know, you had the framework laid in Takauchi and Inaka's paper. And then, you know, five or six years later, you have people really trying to do these different things using these, you know, quicker approaches. They gave them all kind of names. But lo and behold, they were able to get together and says, wait a minute, we're doing some of the same things here. We have we're almost duplicating effort. Let's get together and let's come up with something we can consider to be the foundation here. And so they came up with this term, or they coined a term at that time, agile. And they found the roots and principles behind each method were very, very similar. And so so to denote this commonality, if you will, they coined the term agile, and they put all of these principles under that umbrella. And so from that, out of that came what they call the Agile Project Manifesto. Now, this is, unfortunately, people were, when they saw the Agile Project Manifesto come out of this work, people began to label Scrum in such a way that they thought that it was meant no processes. They thought that it meant no documentation. They thought that it meant that you didn't have to follow a plan. You may hear the term hacking, or you may hear the term cowboy coding, things of that nature. But that is not true. What the Agile Project Manifesto states is that individual and interactions over processes and tools, working software over comprehensive documentation, customer collaboration over contract negotiation, responding to change over following a plan. Now, it says over, not necessary in place of. And so once people saw that, and the fact that it was bolded when it was published, and the fact that they emphasized individual interactions and working software and customer collaboration as well as responding to change, people began to neglect the right side, if you will, of this manifesto by saying that processes and tools, comprehensive documentation, and contract negotiation are following the plan. So the emphasis on these concepts does not negate the other ones. Again, individuals and interactions over processes and tools doesn't mean you do not do any processes and tools. In fact, the Scrum methodology or framework actually puts in place, if you will, a set of processes that you would particularly follow, a set of ceremonies that you would follow. But it encourages individuals and interactions. You know, when it with respect to working software over comprehensive documentation, there is documentation. In fact, in most definitions of done, the comprehensive documentation is a must in order to go with your working software. Now, we know that anytime you're dealing with businesses, you're going to have some contract negotiation. So, you know, to say that there's not any contract negotiation is a fallacy in itself. But this concept is trying to say, or this framework is trying to say, that we want you to do customer collaboration along with that contract negotiation, because it is truly that collaboration is what's going to give you the actual value, actually give the customer its value. And, of course, the way that Scrum is structured, it allows you to respond to change very quickly. You may hear a lot of times that, you know, making a plan is everything, but once things get started, sometimes the plan go out of the window. But planning is everything. The plan is nothing. You know, going through the thought processes of planning and looking and trying to find out what challenges you may face, what opportunities are there, is everything. So going through the process of planning is very, very important. But it doesn't mean that, you know, just because we have a plan in place that, it's not in the plan, so we're not going to do it. What it allows us to do is to really respond to change, because we try to prioritize our plan and says these things have a higher priority than other things. So if a change happens, we know where there may be some flexibility in our plan. And so, in short, you have this project methodology, this overarching project methodology. You have this concept of waterfall, or this relay race type of approach. And then on the other hand, you have this agile approach. And this agile gives you the individual interaction, the worker software, the customer collaboration, responding to change, whereas this waterfall takes you through this relay race. You know, your requirements, you design, you develop, you test, you implement, you know, all of those relay components you do. And so when you look at the agile is the overarching methodology for these different types of implementation of agile. One may be Scrum, which we're going to talk about. Another may be test-driven development. Another may be extreme programming. And there are others out there called dynamic system development methods, feature-driven development. So all of these really fall underneath the umbrella of agile, and agile falls underneath the umbrella of a project methodology. On the other hand, you have waterfall, which falls under the umbrella of a project methodology. So you have these competing concepts. You have this agile on one hand, and you have this waterfall on the other. And an agile is really the overarching of these different implementations of agile, which consist of, you know, dynamic system development, extreme programming, test-driven development, and Scrum. And so what we want to do, we really want to focus on Scrum as one of the different implementations of this agile methodology. And so if you have any experience in Scrum, give me a call. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And after this brief intermission, we're going to talk about Scrum. We're going to get a little bit more into the details. I'll be right back.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
All right, welcome back, welcome back. You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic is Agile Scrum, the new old management framework. This is actually a subject that I borrowed from Takauchi and Nanaka, a paper that was written in 1986 in the Harvard Business Review, and entitled The New Product Development Game by Takauchi and Nanaka. And it was simply a game changer, if you will, because they introduced this whole concept, what we know today to be called Scrum. And in the paper they write that the rules of the game in the new product development are changing. Many companies have discovered that it takes more than accepted basis of high quality, low cost, and differentiation to excel in today's competitive market. It also takes speed and flexibility. They go on to describe the difference between the relay approach and the scrum approach, or what they call the rugby approach, and they compare, or they contrast, the fact that this relay approach means that you hand this methodology down from one to the other. For example, you go from requirements, a concept, to requirements, from requirements to implementation to testing. And whereas the rugby approach kind of moves as a unit, doing all of those things collectively as they get towards those incremental development. So, again, this was introduced in 1986 by Takauchi and Nanaka. And before the break, we kind of differentiated the difference between the waterfall and agile. Both of those are project methodologies. And under agile, you have, you know, different implementation of agile, which one may be feature-driven development. Another may be test-driven development. Another may be extreme programming. All of these are agile methodology. Scrum is another one of those. And so Scrum is what our focus is really on today, is the fact that Scrum is an agile methodology, which was really truly introduced in 1986, which I would consider to be the grandfather of Scrum, by Takauchi and Nanaka. And so the collection of ideas of the span of time that gave birth to Scrum was truly Takauchi, but we also had some other influence in 1991 by DeGrasse and Stahl in something called Wicked Problems and Righteous Solutions. And they refer to this Scrum, this also approaching Scrum. And then, of course, what came on the scene, which is pretty much who has championed the Scrum methodology, which was Ken Swaberg and Jeff Sutherland. And so since that time, Sutherland and Swaberg described Scrum and presented the results in Uppsala, in Austin. And so me being in the Lone Star State really has had a real influence. The Lone Star State has had a real influence on me and Agile, because it kind of permeates the software development methodologies across this region of the country. And then, of course, in 2001, Agile Software Development with Scrum was written by Swaberg and Mike Beadle. And from, since that time, it has really taken off. And so when you hear the term, this is 2011, and when you hear the term, or you hear people's implementation of the term, in a lot of cases, you may hear that this is something new or it doesn't have any legs, but it's really truly been around for a long time, at least the concepts has, and I think that it has gotten better because people are now understanding what Scrum really means as opposed to implementing their own version of it by saying we're just doing daily stand-ups or we may be doing Scrum, but we're doing this, or we're doing Scrum, but we're doing that, you know, and so they kind of give you reasons or rationale for not implementing the entire framework because of for whatever reason. And so Scrum is a management framework for incremental product development. You know, I can say that I use Scrum in my everyday life. So Scrum is not just for software development. Initially, before I became a certified Scrum Master, I would hear people refer to Scrum as a software development methodology, but truly Scrum can be used as a program or project management methodology, and because of the framework that it provides. It's not necessarily a methodology, because there's nothing you can go and says, you know, if you're having a problem in this area, there's a method that you can go and look at, and Scrum says, here's the solution. No, Scrum is truly a framework. You know, it gives you the structure of roles, meetings, rules, and artifacts, and it makes the team responsible for creating an adapting process to this framework. So again, it gives you the boundaries in which you play in, and you have to work within those boundaries to be able to understand how to champion this model. Again, Scrum to me is not just a software development component or methodology. It's, to me, is more, because as I've moved into management over the last year or so, it has truly shown me that this can be applied to almost any thing that you're putting together. So I would encourage people that are outside of the, you know, technology industry or software development industry or hardware engineering industry to really try to look into this framework, because it can truly be adopted for whatever you're doing. And in fact, I am leading some other efforts outside of what I'm doing within my software development teams, and I'm using Scrum to do that. We do the planning up front. We have a burn down chart based on the tasks that we do. You know, I do frequent stand ups with the team to make sure that, you know, they're at least saying what they're following through, basically. And then at the end, we have a review that says, here's what we did. You know, this is what we thought we were going to do. And then finally, the retrospective is where we sit down and talk about, you know, what went right, what went wrong, how do we improve this, what do we get rid of, things of that nature. So, again, Scrum is more than a software development structure. So I would encourage you to really look into that. Now, Takauchi and Nanaka talked about the fact that the difference between the relay race and the moving the ball as a team. So I'm not going to go into to that anymore, but I will tell you that there's a lot of benefits to Agile Scrum. It gives you relentless focus on the customer. You, instead of coming up front saying, okay, customer, you and I, let's sit down and talk about what you think. And then we go on and we write down all of these quote-unquote requirements. You know, we try to figure out everything that the customer wants without even taking a look at the product or taking a look at the situation in more detail. We just going from, you know, my mind to his mind, or my mind to her mind. And then, you know, we go down and, you know, 6 months later we come back and says, here's what you said. And that's not nowhere near what the customer or client wanted. So with this Scrum approach, you really get a chance to focus on the customer relentlessly by doing small chunks. Let's give you the overarching vision. Let's put together how we think you're going to use this, and let's bring you a version of it. And then by bringing you a version of it, then you can actually see, you know, if it's important or other features that you want to add to it or remove based on now the concept coming to fruition. Another benefit of Scrum is that it's the avoidance of feature bloat, software bloat. or any type of excess, if you will. It allows you to prioritize the work according to what the customer wants. It makes us time box our work to focus on concentrated efforts. We focus on providing value to the customer, and we're not trying to waste a lot of time on features that no one asked for. You know, so basically, to avoid all of this excess, if you will, what we try to do is, okay, let's look at it. You listed these 100 things that you want. And if you had to put them in a priority, let's prioritize them. So we list them out, and we take a look at the top 10. And so now we say, with these top 10, we're going to give you, you know, so many days, let's say 2 to 4 weeks, and we're going to deliver you those top 10 to you. Then we show the customer these top 10 components, and they look at it and say, okay. And then it may come into the place that now, since they've looked at the top 10, looked at the use of how they're going to use it, the BOP 20 may just fall off altogether. They may not even want those last 20 anymore. So now you can deliver what they want, and you don't have to worry about delivering all of this excess so you didn't waste time on things that no one really wanted. And then another benefit of Scrum is the fact that it has a lot of accountability and commitments. You know, people are held to their work, and it which leads to more realistic sizing, and work is tracked, and commitments are really enforced. So there's a lot of benefits of Scrum. So, and other things that it provides also a path to continuous improvement. Its potential to significantly cut time and money while improving quality, and of course, it's a light process framework. You know, you don't have a whole lot of processes. You don't have you must follow one-to-N processes, or if you don't, you're not gonna get quality software. No process for the sake of processes. You know, we want to be able to provide the Agile Scrum framework, and then allow the flexibility to change to fit the circumstances. And so, in order to be able to really do this, it requires a deep understanding of the tenets of Agile and Scrum to be able to really add a lot of benefit. So the next thing I want to talk about are the roles of Scrum. Now, again, when you hear people's implementation of Scrum, a lot of times they tell you that they're doing Scrum, but the only thing that they're doing is Agile. I'm doing Scrum, but this. I'm doing Scrum, but that. And so the roles in Scrum are sometimes overlooked because people kind of mix and match different methodologies. They would say they would still follow, the legacy, roles where you have a team lead and you have a software manager and you have a project manager and you have a program manager. I mean, you have all of these levels that are engaged in delivering a product, and then the team is really seems really insignificant. You have the hierarchy, if you will. And so the roles are really not emphasized. In Scrum, the roles they're just really three simple roles. You have a product owner, you have a Scrum master, and you have the team. And in this structure, the team is really at the highest component of our organizational chart. And then where you would have you kind of reverse the chart, if you will. You would turn the chart upside down because the most important people in this particular in the roles of Scrum is really the team members. And so instead of the team members working for, I put that in quotation marks, for everybody above them, what you really have, what you truly have, is the fact that everybody works a team. Everybody's working for trying to get the team what they need. And so these roles are the product owner, the Scrum Master, and, of course, the team. Now, there's a cartoon out there that really illustrates the roles of Scrum, and then it's called, you may hear this term, chicken and pig. And so the cartoon goes a little something like this by Clark and Vizos. It says, "Hey, pig, I was thinking we should open a restaurant." And the pig says, "I don't know. What could we call it?" And the chicken thinks about it and says, "How about ham and eggs?" Then the pig responds with, "No, thanks. I be committed, but you only be involved. And what this really means is that the chicken lays the eggs, and he can stay around a lot longer and just keep delivering the eggs. But when you're talking about the pig, if you're going to deliver some ham, that means you got to get rid of the body part. That means whatever he's involved in, he's really, really, truly committed, where the chicken is just partially involved. And so who are the pigs versus who are the chickens? Well, I talked about the scrum roles being the product owner, the scrum master, and the team. Now, the pigs are the team, because they determine approaches, they sign up for tasks, and they commit to due dates. And everybody else is what we consider to be chickens, the stakeholders. So chickens provide input regarding the product and processes. They kind of support the role of the team. But basically, the pigs, the team, is really who's committed to most of the delivery of a product or some software. Now, scrum teams are optimally 4 to 10 people. Anything above that, there are some mathematics out there to talk about the efficiency rates and things of that nature when you start going outside of that. And again, as I said before, scrum defines three roles, which is the product owner, the scrum master, and the team. And so when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about each of those roles, and we're going to talk about the value that they bring to each to the team.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Geek Speak. I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic is Agile Scrum, the new old management framework, which is a topic I borrowed from Takauchi and Nanaka, which is a paper from a paper that was written in the Harvard Business Review back in 1986, entitled "The New Product Development Game." Now, in the paper, Takauchi and Nanaka talk about the differences between the relay race style approach to delivering a product, as opposed to the rugby approach style to delivering a product. They say the reason why that they looked at this in a little bit of more detail, is because they said that the rules of the game in the new product development are changing. Many companies have discovered that it takes more than the accepted basics of high quality, low cost, and differentiation to excel in today's competitive market. It also takes speed and flexibility. They go on to say, instead of a holistic or rugby approach where a team tries to go the distance as a unit, passing the ball back and forth, people are using the approach to the traditional approach or sequential or relay approach to the product development. Again, Scrum, in a lot of cases, people think that is something that just happened over the last decade or so, but the tenets of Scrum have been around for quite some time. So that's why we want to kind of introduce Scrum and talk a little bit about Scrum. And so if you have some experience in Scrum or you have some questions about Scrum, please feel free to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. Before the break, we were talking about the roles of Scrum. I introduced the three defined roles, which are product owner, Scrum Master, and the team. And what we want to do now is we want to take a look, take a deep dive into each of the roles. Now, the first one, the role of the product owner. And so, in short, the product owner is a single person representing the stakeholders and or a customer. In my experience, the Scrum holder, the actual product owner, is basically the heartbeat of the customer. This particular person knows, what the customer desires. He understands. He thinks like the customer. He acts like the customer. He's a part of, what the customer wants and desires. So it is imperative to have a good product owner who is really engaged with your customer. The product owner also has final authority and therefore accountability in creating and prioritizing the product backlog. And so the product backlog is a list of features or components that you would like to deliver to your customer. And so because the product owner and the customer are engaged all the time, they're talking, they're communicating, the product owner is making sure that the customer needs are being met, that we're delivering features that they desire. So if you have a product backlog or a list of features that you want to deliver to the customer, it is incumbent on the product owner to make sure that they're in a priority order, meaning that if you have a list of 100, the top 10 areas you want to make sure that their top 10 areas is always at the top of the list. They are the main focal points. And then anything below that, you want to make sure that next segment is what the customer desires, because in many cases, when you get to delivering an iteration to the customer may find that ultimately that they don't want the bottom part of the list. They were truly looking for what was on the top, and those other things are nice to have, but they may not be used. So again, the product owner is working diligently with the customer to make sure that EA understands the customer needs and desires and wants, as well as being to put them in a priority order. The product owner must be available to the team at any time, because the team is going to be working to deliver the product to the product to the product owner and ultimately to the customer. And when they have questions or they need some clarification, they need to be able to have access to the product owner. And this product owner would need to make himself available to be able to make sure that they're working on the highest priority things and that they do understand what the customer needs. The product owner is also the person that decides whether to ship the product or not. also accepts or rejects product increment, and he has a leadership role. So the product owner is very, very important to the scrum process. The next role is the scrum master. This is the facilitator. Now, this guy is the facilitator to the team and product owner. If you want to talk about a management role, if you want to use a traditional term, management role, this would be your guy. This guy, he clears the roadblock for the team. He insulates the team from issues or challenges or changes that may come down the stream. He tracks and reports the team's progress. He makes sure that the rules of Scrum are being followed. He makes sure he enforces the time box. And when you're talking about time boxes, this means that, you know, when you're talking about having a sprint that's 4 weeks, so from start to finish, that's a time box. When you're talking about having the daily Scrum being 15 minutes, from start to finish, that 15 minutes, that's a time box. When you're talking about having, you know, planning meetings, 8 hours for a 4 weeks of 4 week sprint, that time box, he makes sure that from start to finish that you do not go outside of those time boxes. That's the Scrum Master's role. Again, he is a facilitator, but most people that use most of the legacy terms like manager and things of that nature, he would be synonymous with the role of a manager. Now, this is the role that I fulfill on a day-to-day basis. And as the Scrum Master, I try to emphasize to the team that I truly work for them. And what do I mean by that? You know, I talked earlier, during an earlier segment before one of the breaks, I said that traditionally you have a hierarchy. And in the hierarchy, you have, you know, a manager, and then underneath the manager, you have a lead, and then underneath the lead, you have a team, and then the team members have their own hierarchy, things of that nature. And with that particular organizational structure, I like to turn that thing upside down. I like to say that the team is at the highest component of the organizational structure, and then me, I work for, if I'm their manager, if I'm the scrum master, I work for the team. I'm the one that makes sure that I clear the roadblocks for the team. What do I mean by roadblocks? If they need a piece of equipment, or if they're having problems coordinating with an outside party, if they're having problems getting resources, if their systems are not performing at the rate in which they can get work done, if they need tools in order to get, that is my responsibility to ensure that they get what they need to do their job. And so it is imperative that I'm able to, you know, facilitate but clear roadblocks. You know, insulating the team means that when changes come around, you know, if you're in a corporate structure, you're going to always have, you know, a lot of different things that come up throughout the day. So I try to be a filter to help, you know, help isolate or insulate the team from all of these external roadblocks or things that come into come into play that may prevent them from being more productive. Again, that's the second role in this Scrum. And so the next one is what I would consider to be the team. Now, the team is what I would consider to be cross-functional group of value providers. They commit to accomplishing prioritized tasks identified throughout the cycle. And when I say cross-functional, I mean just this. If you are a software development shop, or if you're a shop that delivers anything, if you're a management shop that's, you know, that does deliver any kind of product, instead of having a group of software engineers as a part of the team, you may want to look into having every component a part of that team. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the software development perspective. So you have software engineers, but you also have architects, you have analysts, you have testers, you have UI experts, you have designers, you have DBAs, you have security people. All of these people really need to make up the team as opposed to just having software engineers. So historically, I've worked on programs or for companies that just have all of the software development team together. Now, the software development team may be at different levels. You may have a manager that's a software developer. You may have a lead as a software developer. You may have, you know, a bunch of team members with different levels of experience as software developers. But that software development team would be considered the team, as opposed to having the software developers as well as the testers, as well as the DBAs, as well as your infrastructure guys, as well as your security, as well as your system engineers, all together on a day-to-day basis. So when questions come up, instead of the software engineers making assumptions, they actually have the resources there and available to, so it eliminates the middleman. So they're available to answer the question. This team becomes self-organizing and has autonomy in how best to complete tasks. So which means that there's no heroes on the team. You know, we try to have this team self-organized by looking at the work that's provided there. And they figure out, you know, based on their own creativity, their own experiences, you know, how best to accomplish the mission together collectively. As opposed to saying, you know, that's the lead and it's the lead responsibility to make sure the work get done. And the software engineers or the test engineers or every other engineer says, well, it's not my responsibility. Well, not in Scrum. Scrum really emphasizes the team. I know in my everyday work, I emphasize the team as being the backbone of everything because I try to empower them to make those decisions because it's very difficult for me as a Scrum Master to kind of tell them what they should be doing. They are the ones that are on the keyboards. They are the ones that are really truly entrenched in the work that's associated with what they're trying to get done. So it is incumbent upon me not to be a barrier to them completing the work for me, but me to help facilitate them and then get them the resources so the team can get that work done. So basically, those are the roles of Scrum. In a nutshell, again, you have the product owner, you have the Scrum Master, and you have the team. And as I stated earlier, is when you hear people talking about Scrum, they only look at it just having the daily stand-ups. They still have the legacy organizational structure. However, true Scrum, you really want to make sure you introduce these roles, make sure people are following their responsibilities under these roles, and you want to give the team true autonomy, allow them to be self-organizing, allow them to volunteer for tasks as opposed to being assigned tasks, allow them to use their creativity to produce the product, and so they truly have ownership of the product when it's delivered. And so up next, I want to talk about what I call the ceremonies of Scrum. Now, there are four ceremonies of Scrum. And I want to put an asterisk by that because there is something that's also called the backlog refinement meeting that is paramount to being able to produce some kind of a look ahead. But I really want to focus on the four ceremonies of Scrum. And the four ceremonies are sprint planning, the daily Scrum, the sprint review, and the sprint retrospective. And when we return, I want to talk a little bit more in detail about each one of these specific ceremonies. Again, those are sprint planning, daily Scrum, sprint review, and sprint retrospectives. Be right back.
enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Geek Speak. I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic is Agile Scrum, the new old management framework. Again, this topic was borrowed from Takauchi Nanaka from a paper that was written in 1986 in the Harvard Business Review entitled The New Product Development Game. And Takauchi and Nanaka, they actually were really truly what I would consider to be the grandfather of Scrum. In the paper, they write that the rules, this is 1986 now, the rules of the game in new product development are changing. Many companies have discovered that it takes more than the accepted basics of high quality, low cost, and differentiation to excel in today's competitive market. It also takes speed and flexibility. And so over several years following, you had Sutherland and Swaber come together to champion Scrum, and a lot of others that were intimately involved into making Scrum, the framework, what it is today. And so just to recap, Scrum is a management framework for incremental product development using one or more cross-functional, self-organizing team of about between 4 to 10 people. Scrum provides a structure of roles, meetings or ceremonies, and artifacts. Teams are responsible for creating and adapting their processes within the framework. Scrum uses fixed link iteration called sprints, which are typically 2 to 4 weeks long. Scrum teams attempt to build a potentially shippable and properly tested product every iteration. Now, I also talked a little bit about the roles of Scrum. I went into the fact that there are three roles. The roles are product owner, the Scrum Master, and team. And I introduced what I would consider to be the meetings or the ceremonies of Scrum, which are sprint planning, daily Scrum, sprint review, and the sprint retrospective. And so I want to talk a little bit more about each one of those ceremonies. And then I also did a caveat of what this thing I call the backlog refinement meeting, right? I'm going to talk a little bit about what that means, but specifically, but first I'm going to go into detail about the sprint planning, the daily scrum, the sprint review, and the retrospective. And they should happen in that order. So first, the sprint planning meeting. Now, at the beginning of each sprint, and the sprint being a fixed length of time in which you're going to produce an iteration or a product in an iteration. So that's what I mean by the term sprint. And so at the beginning of each sprint, the product owner, which is defined, and the team hold a sprint planning meeting. So to negotiate which product backlog items they will attempt to convert to a working product during the sprint. I described earlier that the product owner really has the heartbeat of the customer, and they are engaged throughout the life cycle of the release or the releases. And during this time, it is incumbent upon the product owner to help keep the product backlog in a prioritized manner. And when I say product backlog, I'm specifically referring to the features or the items that are that are listed by the customer as being features that they want delivered. Now, it is a ranked list of desired functionality. It's visible to all the stakeholders. It's constantly prioritized by the product owner. And the top of this product backlog are more granular than the items on the bottom. And what I mean by more granular is that, you know, the customer says, I want 100 features. And we don't go into detail, very grave details about each of those features, but we look at the top ones and let's get as specific as possible on the ones at the top, and the ones that are coming up, you know, shortly after that, then we may want to get a little bit more detail than the ones that are lower on the priority list. We says, okay, we kind of have it as an epic or as a larger component as opposed to the ones that are on the very top of the list. And again, the sprint planning meeting is to negotiate which product backlog items they will attempt to convert into a working product during that sprint. The product owner is responsible for declaring which items are the most important to the business. The team is responsible for selecting the amount of work they feel they can implement without incurring technical debt. Now, this is a term, technical debt, that is basically saying that you want to make sure that you understand the definition of done with this product. So I introduced the term product backlog, and I described it by saying it is a list of features that should be in priority order. The ones on the top of this product backlog should be well defined. And so this item, if you will, we pull one of those items off the product backlog and say we want to look at this thing in great detail. So we need to know specifically what it means to be done, what it means to be complete for this particular item. And so if you don't get it right, and when I say right, meaning you don't understand, you know what it means to be done in that product, and you deliver that feature to your customer, and it comes back, and something is wrong with it. The gap between the time that the technology or the implementation between what you did when you delivered it and when you got it back to clean that component up, to clean that delta up, is what is considered technical debt. So again, if you deliver a feature that has not been truly definition of done, has not been truly defined, and you give that to your customer, and the customer says this is not, it's not implemented properly, then the delta between that actual release and the fact that you that it has all those discrepancies between that is where your technical debt lies. And so that's what we mean by technical debt. So the team pulls work from the product backlog to the sprint backlog. And so the product backlog is something that the customer and the product owner, you know, they look at all the time. But the sprint backlog is a set of features that we said the team is going to commit to. So you have these two backlogs. One backlog is overarching for the release, whereas here's my wish list or my to-do list, if you will, my wish list. And then the sprint backlog is say, okay, we've identified the top 10 from the product backlog, and now we're going to pull them off and put them onto the sprint backlog, meaning that within the next 2 to 4 weeks, these items, these top 10, are what we as a team are going to commit to deliver in this next release. And so that's the sprint backlog. So when teams are given complex work that has inherent uncertainty, they must work together to intuitively gauge their capacity to commit to these items. While learning from previous sprints, planning their hourly capacity and comparing their estimates to actuals make the team pretend to be precise and reduces ownership of their commitments. Unless the work is truly predictable, they should discard such practices within the first few sprints or avoid them altogether. Until a team has learned how to complete a potentially shippable product increment each sprint, it should reduce the amount of functionality it commits to. Failure to change old habits leads to technical debt and eventual design death. If the top of the product backlog has not been refined, a major portion of the planning meeting should be spent doing this, as described in, as I will describe in the backlog refinement meeting. Toward the end of the sprint planning meeting, the team breaks the selected items into initial list of sprint tasks and makes a final commitment to do the work. The maximum time allotted or is recommended for planning a four-week sprint is 8 hours, reduced proportionately for a shorter sprint. So what's interesting is it's about 2 hours per week, basically. So what's interesting about the sprint planning meeting is that this is where you, as a product owner, or you as a scrum master, or you as a team member, get together and you begin to break down or disaggregate the task. Actually, you disaggregate the user story. So this is a new term that I'm introducing now called the user story. Now, the user story is, in a lot of cases, people try to make them synonymous with an actual use case. But the reality is that that is not the case. A use case is something that that breaks down how the user or how some element is going to use that specific feature. And when we return, I'm going to break down the user story as well as move into the components of the daily scrum, the sprint review, and the sprint retrospectives. Be back in a minute.
With Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Geek Speak. I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, just broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic is Agile Scrum, the new old management framework. Again, I borrowed this topic from Takauchi and Tanaka's paper written in the Harvard Business Review in 1986, entitled The New Product Development Game, where they talked about the rules of the game in new product development are changing. They write that many companies have discovered that it takes more than the accepted basics of high quality, low cost, and differentiation to excel in today's competitive market. It also takes speed and flexibility. And the Scrum framework provides the tools or the tenets that would allow one to deliver a product with speed, flexibility, and I want to say accuracy. And so we were just covering the components of the ceremonies of Scrum, and which were sprint planning, daily Scrum, the review meeting, as well as the retrospective. And I was talking a little bit more about the sprint planning meeting, taking a deeper look at the sprint planning meeting. And I introduced this term called a user story. Now, I recall using the term user story back when I was using extreme programming. And a user story is one or more sentences in an everyday or business language of the user that captures what the user wants to achieve. User stories are used in the agile methodologies for the basics of what features that can be implemented. Now, Michael Cohn has written a lot about user stories. And he writes in his paper that talks a little bit about user stories. And he quoted Ron Jeffries by saying that there's three C's to writing user stories: card, conversation, and confirmation. He says stories are traditionally written on note cards. Cards may be annotated with estimates, notes, etc. And the details behind the story come out during conversation with product owners, and the confirmation component consists of a second test, confirm the story was coded correctly. And there's some examples here from a travel website, and it takes on the frame, the framework of as a user or as some component, I want to do some business functionality, and for some purpose. So an example would be, as a user, I want to reserve a hotel room, or as a vacation planner, I want to see photos of the hotel. And so you really want to get, you want to have that type of framework when you're dealing with user stories, and to make them, follow the user story component, if you will, you should. Here's some good examples. As a VP marketing, I want to select the time frame to use when reviewing the performance of past promotional campaigns, so that I can identify and repeat profitable ones. So again, as a component, as a user, or some type of user, I want to do something. What's the business functionality? So that I can, for what purpose, right? Again, as a VP of marketing, I want to select the time frame to use when reviewing the performance of past promotional campaigns so that I can identify and repeat profitable ones. Okay, that's the makeup of a user story. And so when we talk about those user stories, you want to make them as thin or as understandable as possible, and when it can't be broken down, where they're really at a higher level of abstraction, they're really called epics. And so you want to take those epics or those larger user stories and break them down into something that's smaller, something that's demonstrable, something that you can demonstrate, something that you can test, something that you can verify. And so when you can do that, that has that specificity to that user story, then you're close to being able to have a user story that you know that's demonstrable. Okay. So the next component of the next ceremony, if you will, is what we would consider the daily scrum, or you may hear the term daily stand-up. Now, although historically, when I've heard people that say they were using Scrum as a framework, they would only talk about this particular ceremony. Very seldom would I hear people talk about sprint planning meetings, sprint review meetings, sprint retrospective. But I would definitely hear them talk about the daily stand-up, or what they would consider to be the daily scrum. And so let me describe for you what that is. So every day at the same time and place, the scrum team spend a total of 15 minutes reporting to each other. And each team member summarizes what he did the previous day, what he will do today, and what impediment he faces. Earlier I talked about the scrum master's role being a facilitator, removing impediments or removing roadblocks. And I also mentioned that the Scrum Master's role was to enforce time boxes. This 15-minute structure is enforced by the Scrum Master, and it really keeps the ball moving. This is not a status meeting. It is just a place to report what an individual did the previous day, what they intend on doing today, and what impediment he faces. Now, if you have any experience in Scrum or have any questions about Scrum, please give me a call. Please join the conversation. And the number to dial is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And if you're interested in getting some Scrum training, go to my website. It's TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. And click on the spiders out there. We have short, productive information sessions designed to enhance revenue and increase sales. So those spiders, or something that will be able to get you up and running real quickly on these type of methodologies or this framework, there's a plethora of different management techniques we have out there outside of Scrum, and so there's a lot of different training that we provide at TaylorMade101.com. Okay, so back to the daily Scrum and sprint execution. So standing up at the daily Scrum will help it keep it short. Topics that require additional attention may be discussed by whomever is interested after every team member has reported. So after you give your report, then you leave the rest of the time to discuss anything else you want to talk about that may need additional attention. The team may find it useful to maintain a current sprint task list, a sprint burn down chart, and an impediment list. So the sprint task list goes without saying, because in order for you to be able to report on what you did last, you need to be able to have some idea of the work that you have that either been, that's started or completed or not started, if you will. And so that having that task is keeps you focused on those areas. And the burn down chart is something that allows you to track your progress over an iteration. So if you have a 4-week sprint and you're going to be, you have so many tasks that are on that sprint backlog, and you want to be able to track the progress and how many tasks you're actually working off between start and finish. Now, during the sprint execution, it is common to discover additional tasks necessary to achieve the sprint goals. Impediments caused by issues beyond the team's control are considered organizational impediments. So this first statement about the sprint execution is common, discovered additional tasks. Well, when you do, during your sprint planning meeting, you may find that the things are that you your assumptions were wrong, but that's okay. So what you do is you add tasks to make sure you are able to investigate it, work them out, and then work them off. So, you know, it's not a matter of I plan to do these eight activities over this week, and then all of a sudden you have four or five more activities that creep in, then everything is, you know, you're a failure. No, not at all. I mean, we encourage you finding more and more out about the user story. That's expected for you to find more. You're not going to know everything up front anyway. So the more you're able to disaggregate, the more you're able to understand about the story, about delivering the feature to the product owner, and ultimately to the customer, the better. It is almost always useful for the product owner to attend the daily scrum, but when an attendee also happens to be the team's boss, the individual gun effect hampers self-organization and emergent leadership. People lacking real experience of team self-organization won't see this problem, just as fish are unaware of water. Conversely, a team that needs additional expertise and product requirement will benefit from increased product owner involvement, including daily scrum attendance. The daily scrum is intended to disrupt old habits of working separately. Members should remain vigilant for signs of the old approach. For example, looking only at the scrum master when speaking is one symptom that the team hasn't learned to operate as a self-organizing entity. So, there's several questions that must be asked during the daily stand-up or the daily scrum. And basically, you want to know what you did yesterday and what are you working on today and what roadblocks. Again, this is not somewhere you come in and talk about all of the challenges that you had and the people that didn't do their job. You want to report impediments if you had resources and were not available, or there were times in which you could not get something done because of some external roadblock. But we really are trying to find out, you know, how much effort that was involved into the work you did yesterday. What's remaining on that work? You know, what's the remaining work left on that task? Are we getting the work that we said we were going to get done? And then what are you going to be working on today? And it's a good gauge to determine whether a team member is working on something that's a high priority on the list or something that's not even on the backlog. There are cases of times when I was working with my team and the team members would come in and they would say, I'm working on this particular task. And I said, well, that task is not on the backlog. Well, I didn't see anything on there that I could do at that moment, so I began working on this other thing. And it allowed me an opportunity right then to pull them back into the box, if you will, to make sure they were doing things or focus on the tasks that were truly the priorities. Because without that daily scrum, you know, it could have been a week or two before I would have actually caught that, and we could have been wasting time on items that were not high on the priority list. But because of the daily scrum and because I'm asking the question, what did you do yesterday? And because I now can focus on what they're doing today, and then they can report to me what remaining work is associated with those tasks, I can now make sure that everybody is staying pretty much on track, especially at least focusing on the items that are the most important to the release. And so it's very imperative that you continue to monitor your team during this component. And then the other ceremony or the other meeting that is a part of the scrum process or the scrum framework is called the sprint review meeting. Most people may find this synonymous with a demo or a prototype. You know, those are terms you hear when you hear the term sprint review meeting. They're synonymous with sprint review meeting. But in essence, this is a place where at the end of the four-week iteration that we all get in a room. You know, this is not a PowerPoint presentation. This is not something that you're presenting a bunch of design documents. You're presenting working products. You're saying, here is what we've completed, you know, using the definition of done, to memorize to reduce the amount of technical debt that you introduce. But because we know the condition of satisfaction of the product owner and the customer, we want to make sure that we're delivering what we say we were. And you do this in the sprint review meeting. And the sprint review meeting is where the team holds to demonstrate a working product. The meeting should feature a live demonstration, not a report. Again, this is something that you should be able to pull up the product and click on a button, or pull up the product and show the workflow associated with that effort. And so after the demonstration, the product owner reviews the commitments made at the beginning, sprint planning meeting, and declares which item he now considers done based on the agreed upon definition of done. For example, a software item that is merely code complete is not considered done. A design document at the end of a sprint release is not considered done. If you have a set of features that has not been thoroughly tested, it is not considered done. You know, in most cases, you want to try to automate your test. You want to put them in a situation where you can make changes rapidly, and then you can test your code and determine right away that you have broken all of the features that you had working previously you making the change. So it is imperative that you have tested software, because untested software is not shippable. Incomplete items are returned back to the product backlog and ranked according to the product owner's revised priorities, and could be candidates for future sprints. And what this means is basically you had the 10 items that you said you were going to work on. And at the sprint review meeting, you ended up demonstrating 8 of the 10. And in fact, you may have even demonstrated all 10, but the product owner considers that 8 of the 10 were only done and the other 2 were not truly considered done. So you take those remaining 2, especially if they were on low on the priority list. If they were higher on the priority list, we need to make sure we get those done. But if they're low on the priority list, the product owner makes a decision at that time, should we deliver this product to the customer, or should we put these 2 remaining items that were not done back on the product backlog and then renegotiate if they are important? Because once we demonstrate this to the customer and we show them what we've completed, they may decide that, I really don't need those 2 items now. You know, based on what I see here, these other 2 are more important than those 2 features. So let's put those 2 features on the sprint backlog. I want to see those at the next iteration as opposed to the previous 2, which you just put on the sprint backlog. And then between the product owner and the customer, they would negotiate which items that they think should be in the next iteration. So in short, the sprint review meeting is essentially a demo of the working features that the team signed up for initially. And it is incumbent upon the product owner to ensure that the definition of done is truly done. Now, the sprint review meeting is the appropriate meeting for external stakeholders also to attend. It is the opportunity to inspect and adapt the product as it emerges, and iteratively refine everyone's understanding of what the requirements are, what the customer wants. new products, particularly software products, are hard to visualize in a vacuum. So that's why it's always good to have the customer to sit there and be a part of the sprint review meeting. And then finally, we have the sprint retrospective. Now, this is a very important part of Scrum. Historically, when I was were involved in delivering software at the end of each project, and I've delivered many over the years, we would have what we called a lessons learned. And those lessons learned, in many cases, would happen at the end of the entire release. And so although we were able to identify and document all of the bad behaviors and good behaviors that we wanted to get rid of and keep respectively, it was very seldom that we had an opportunity to implement those good and bad behaviors or good behaviors and remove the bad behaviors because that team was dynamic. That team had a different set of chemistry that will be transferred to the new team that I would go to, because the new team had a different set of dynamics, had a different set of idiosyncrasies that were not similar to the previous team. So in a lot of cases, we couldn't take advantage of those lessons learned. But the sprint retrospective allows you to do that every sprint. For example, a sprint, there may be several sprints in a release. So let's say that your sprint is 4 weeks long, and in 4 weeks you delivered an increment or one release, and then over the next sprint you delivered another, and then so and so forth, right? So maybe over the course of 6 months you may have five different releases to the customer. Well, the retrospective, you have an opportunity to refine your processes, your tools, and everything that's associated with delivering their product every increment. So which means instead of waiting 6 months down the road to implement the changes or to reinforce this good behavior and remove the behavior associated with things that are not so productive, you can now do that at increment as opposed to waiting later. So that's why I'm really a big proponent of the retrospective, because you get a chance to take a snapshot of things that you were doing well and remove things that you were not doing not so well, and then you get a chance to implement them the next sprint. So it's incumbent upon the Scrum Master to make sure that when we identify these good behaviors and these bad behaviors, that we remove them. And then we try to reinforce the good ones. So what is the retrospective? Well, each sprint ends with a retrospective. At this meeting, the team reflects on its own process. They inspect their behavior, and they take action to adapt it for the future sprints. Dedicated Scrum Masters will find alternatives to the stale, fearful meetings everyone has come to expect. And an in-depth retrospective requires an environment of psychological safety not found in most organizations. Without safety, the retrospective discussion will either avoid the uncomfortable issues or deteriorate into blaming and hostility. A common impediment to full transparency on the team is this presence of people who conduct performance appraisals. And so a team... it's very difficult for a team to be able to voice their observations and opinions if they think they're in an unsafe environment. So it is imperative that the sprint retrospective meetings be held in a safe environment. safe in the sense of there's nobody there that's going to be saying that, you know, I'm going to be watching what you're saying. There's nobody there that's going to be conducting, that's going to be rating these members, because when you have that, they're going to be fearful of repercussions. Now, although this is not tolerated in the workplace, it happens, you know, it happens in a lot of different cases, right? Whether it's overt or covert, the team members feel uncomfortable when they feel like they're put in a situation where they can't really speak their mind. And so it makes the sprint retrospective really, really unproductive. So there's a couple of different techniques that I use when conducting a sprint retrospective. One of them is really what I call the dynamic duo. And the dynamic duo is where I have a team of 10 members facilitated by me, the scrum master. I would separate the members out into pairs, and I would allow the pairs to sit down and discuss, you know, or to address a few different questions. And then they would take and write those down, as many as they would like. Okay. And so they would ultimately be more comfortable discussing those amongst each other without feeling, you know, any type of not feeling unsafe, basically. And so afterwards, we take those groups of two and then we open them up. And so now we share each group with the entire team. So now you have these five groups discussing what they thought would be the answer to those questions. And then they, because you may have some duplication there, you may have some that the team says, well, you know, here's how I saw that. So they have some discussion around that. Or you may have a team get together and says, well, you know, I didn't think about this. So, yeah, that's a good idea. So you have all of that different dynamic in when you open it up to the larger group. And so the questions that I asked was, what went wrong? What went right? What should we stop doing? And then what should we start doing? And then also, what still puzzles us? Those are the questions that I pose in the retrospective meeting to allow the team members to get together and begin to break down and to say, how do we improve our processes? And then, of course, they open this up, and then the team try to select, you know, maybe 5 to 7 things that I could do. Because throughout the team, you may find 20 things, right? Well, let's prioritize those list of 20 so that we can truly find out how we can implement those. Now, we may list them all, but I, as a scrum master, will focus on the top ones. What are the things that are very pressing? What are the things that I can fix right away, we can start implementing, or I can remove right away so that the team can be more productive? Again, the questions are, what went right? What went wrong? What should we stop doing? What should we start doing, and what still puzzles us? So those are some of the different. So the other one is that's the dynamic duo technique. The other one is the yellow sticky, is which I draw a grid on a whiteboard, and in the grid I put in what went right in one of the quadrants or one of the squares, rather, of the grid, and then I have them write down those issues on the sticky note, and they go put them on the whiteboard up there. So we kind of take a look at it in that manner. So those are the two different techniques I use when we're talking about the sprint retrospective. Now, all members are required or expected to provide input, and it is my responsibility as the scrum masters to ensure that the findings are acted upon. And again, this is an opportunity for us to continue to improve. This is the sprint retrospective now. A common impediment to full transparency on the team, as I mentioned, is the people that are conducting performance appraisals. So when in this sprint retrospective, you want to make sure that it is just relegated to the team. You know, this is not a place for outside influences or management types to come in to kind of be looking around to see if people are complaining or things of that nature. You really want to focus on getting better. Right, so the last thing here is I talked about in the ceremony is really what I call a backlog refinement meeting. And the backlog refinement meeting is something that's not really truly officially a part of Scrum. It's a recommended approach. And it is really kind of like the look ahead. So every day you have the daily Scrum. And in the daily Scrum or the daily stand-up, you talk about what you did yesterday, what you're going to do today, under any roadblocks. This particular daily stand-up is relegated to 15 minutes, and then within those 15 minutes, you have everybody report. And then what you try to do is to make sure that people are tracking. Once that's over, and if and in a lot of cases, you may have some time to kind of look ahead. And this is an opportunity for you to take a look at your product backlog. And at your product backlog, you may be able to get your product owner to answer questions about specific stories. So there may be things that are epics. There may be stories that are that may be, you need some clarity on. This is an opportunity to do that at your daily stand-up in smaller chunks as opposed to getting together for hours at a time to the break down each story. So since you're getting together every day and you have frequent visits of the product owner, you may have an opportunity there to look at some stories that are on your product backlog, to break them down, to get a better understanding, or to maybe answer some questions that you that are poorly understood. So most product backlog items initially need refinement because they are too large or poorly understood. Teams have found it useful to take a little time out of the sprint execution to help prepare the product backlog for the next sprint planning meeting. In the backlog refinement meeting, the team estimates the amount of effort that would expand to complete items in the product backlog and provide other technical information to help the product owner prioritize them. So this is something that the product owner should be looking at on an ongoing basis. This is something that the team should be looking at on an ongoing basis in order to make sure that things are very, very well understood. So that pretty much concludes today's segment on Agile Scrum, the new old management framework. And a lot of these components that I talked about today is come from Michael James. Michael James worked directly with Ken Schwaber to become a Scrum trainer. He also coaches technical folks, managers, and executes on optimizing business to deliver value. There's a PDF out there, or that's called 6 pages about Scrum, with a lot of the information came from today, along with my hands-on experience dealing with Scrum. And so I just wanted to give a credit to Michael James for coming up with this wonderful 6 pages about Scrum that you can pretty much download from the internet and take a look at, and it should help you understand Scrum a lot better. Again, my name is Patrick Cook. I'm the president and CEO of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. This is a program called Geek Speak, and I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic was about Agile Scrum, the new old management framework, which was a title borrowed from Takauchi and Tanaka from their paper that was written in 1986 in the Harvard Business Review called The New Product Development Game. And I would encourage you to go out there and download that paper and read the new product development game. It is a very good read. It talks about a lot of the idiosyncrasies about this new approach. It actually has some It highlights some companies both in Japan and in the United States that have taken this new approach to managing the product development process. Their research examined multinational companies like Fuji, Xerox, Canon, Honda, Epson, 3M, Hewlett-Packard, just to name a few. And so this is some empirical evidence as well as some good good theoretical knowledge out here for executing Scrum. It has been a wonder and a pleasure. You can always send me an email if you have questions at pcook@tailormade101.com. Again, that's P as in Papa, C as in Charlie, Oscar Kilo at tailormade101.com. And if you you can join me next week. Also, I have a show that I do every Sunday called Current Events with Patrick Cook, where we talk about a lot of different issues going on within our society on a day-to-day basis. I also have a tailor-made marketplace out there where you can go out and get any kind of book associated with Agile Scrum or leadership management, or if you're just looking to get some gifts for a special someone in your life, you can also do that as well. So we have a lot going on here at TaylorMade, and Agile Scrum, what we call Geek Speak, is a part of that, as well as TaylorMade training and consulting. We do a lot of training and consulting. I also have a talk radio show that I do a couple of days a week now, one being Geek Speak, the other being Current Events with Patrick Cook, which airs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Again, this is Geek Speak. I'm your geekologist, Patrick Cook, broadcasting live from the Lone Star State. Today's topic was Agile Scrum, the new old management framework. All right, please feel to send me an email or to join the conversation next time. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you listening via Blog Talk Radio, click the follow button. You can always follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And I tweet daily about what I'm doing in Scrum. So if you need to have some questions, feel free to come out and do that. All right, until next time, stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Geek Speak.